You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavs podcast. I am your host, Chris Manning from FitTheSword.com. Today's show is a pretty cool conversation. I talked with Spencer Davies from Basketball Insiders, a bunch of other places. You can find him on Twitter at SpinDavies. He's going to be someone who I'm hoping is going to be a regular appearance on the show. I think Spencer is like me at a lot of the games, at a lot of practices. So it's good to have someone that also has the ability to be at these things and offer insight from access on this podcast. Things we covered include Kevin Love and the comments he made to Cleveland.com's Chris Fedor on Wednesday morning. I'm a little more cynical about those than Spencer is, but I think they're interesting and they're just on their own 2 feet. If you missed that, Kevin said that he wants to basically be with the Cavs for the rebuild, doesn't want to ask out, said he didn't get any calls from his agent this summer, a whole bunch of other interesting stuff. You can find that piece from Chris Fedor down in the comments below if you haven't read it already. And then we talked about the Cavs guard situation. As you know, if you're following this team or interested in this team, this is a Cavs team with a crap ton of guards. It's going to sort itself out in a lot of interesting ways. So Spencer and I dove deep into that and sort of what all that looks like. They have practice again on Thursday. We'll see what they say about different stuff. And then they play a preseason game on Friday. So we're not going to have like a traditional game preview for a preseason game. Will have something up. I'll have something up, and then once we get into the season, people like Matt Shook and others from around the network will be on, but we're going to wait to do that until the season really gets going. But without further ado, here is my conversation with Spencer Davies. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. All right, Spencer. So Kevin Love, in these first comments we get from him, really about what he thinks of his future, says that he wants to remain with the team through the rebuild, throughout everything that's going to be going on. Says, you know, I know it's a process, I know it's a business, I know that things can change, but I'm committed. I'm going to always do right by Cleveland. What do you make of him saying that, the timing of it? Just what do you make of that kind of part of this Cavs preseason news cycle that we're seeing?
Well, you know, it's a week into training camp, and I think the timing was pretty solid, where it just because, you know, there's been rumors running rampant throughout, I mean, the summer and teams talking and rumors going around talking about him being traded. You know, Portland was a name that was a team that was brought up. Brooklyn was a team that was brought up. Just even just speculation-wise, saying, "Oh, this All-Star would fit great with this group because of where his timeline is and where it doesn't fit with the Cavs, who don't have a player even in his decade of age. He's the only 30-year-old player on the team." But I think that this is a way of assuring everybody that he will not be the story this year. About it's going to be about him. You know, it's about the progression and the development of the young guys and him being the leader. I think the quote that I saw in there, and something he said multiple times, is you have to learn to follow before you learn to lead. And obviously when LeBron James was there, he was picking up pointers on how to be a leader, silent leader, a vocal leader, leader by example. So I think that's what he's going to try to do this year, is just kind of be that voice. And when things are going tough, that's the guy that's going to step up and speak out and tell him to stick to it, you know. On the floor, obviously we know what the impact he had on Colin Sexton and Jetty Osman last year. I think that he could develop a really good rapport with Darius Garland this year. And he keeps the reality based in, if they're going to move on from me, they're going to move on from me. But the premise of the article is Kevin Love is not going to ask out for a trade.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think you look at him, I think it's number one, just kind of a good PR move to kind of, and he's been a very positive guy through our camp. You know, I think everyone's been a little bit more upbeat this year. I don't know if you'd agree with that based on just how
let's say, terse the locker room, not terse, but kind of down the locker room was towards the end of last year. I think seeing them this year, everyone's a little more upbeat, a little more jovial, Kevin kind of being among that. I generally like do believe him that he likes the process of this. I think the practices have been something that have been really interesting for a lot of guys. I think the question that this ultimately becomes, if Kevin's not going to Kobe Altman in ownership and saying, trade me to Portland or wherever, what is the line where the Cavs are like, I wonder if we get an idea at some point of like what their return, what they think is like at value or, you know, or above value of what they think Love's going to provide the organization in terms of, you know, star talent, helping young guys develop, whatever. What Beilein thinks is that, and if there's also if there's a Rubicon for Kevin Love to cross in terms of him changing his mind about this and kind of quietly doing like what Russell Westbrook did and being like, okay, I think the marriage has run its course. I want another challenge. I wonder what that sort of looks like. I don't know. It's very early. We'll see what the first month of the season looks like. I think that'll tell us a little bit if this mood's really going to hold. But I think right now, I think this is just sort of a status quo thing more than anything else.
Yeah, there's not really too much, I would say, like per se news in it. It's a well-written article. Chris Fedor did an excellent job detailing everything about his relationship with the city of Cleveland, you know, doing the championship run thing. It was a really well-written article. But as far as, like, news-wise, this is kind of like, all right, I'm not going to be this locker room cancer, nor have I ever been in my career. But I'm here for the long run if they want me here, type of thing. And I do think that the Cavs do want him here. I believe that they're not going to get rid of him unless they are just absolutely floored by an offer. And that's indicative by the article as well. It just depends on the direction of the season and where the Cavs see themselves. I mean, they've done a really good job of getting under the luxury tax. So it's not like this is a hampered butter for money thing, we've got to get rid of him type of deal. This is a, all right, does he fit with where we're going, our direction, with a bunch of rookies and second-year players and a few in the middle? You know, he's the only 30-year-old on the team. He's had championship experience. Tristan Thompson has as well, but he's on an expiring deal, so that makes him an even different type of situation. But I feel like this is an opportunity for Kevin Love. I think that he is thinking to himself, this is an opportunity for me to show what I couldn't do in Minnesota. Okay, I was too young to be the leader there in Minnesota. I was too young and didn't really know what it meant to be that guy, to, you know, lead, to hear my voice for the others. It's an opportunity for him to kind of, I don't want to say right the wrongs, because it was an early time in his career and maybe people were expecting too much out of him then, but this is an opportunity for him to just kind of be that guy and the face of the franchise without being too much in the spotlight.
Yeah, I think that's all right. I think I'll be curious to see kind of, again, what Kevin's kind of temperament is like throughout the year. He's the elder statesman in the team, even though he's kind of in his prime, I think should be an all-star level guy this year. I think that's kind of in the cards for him. That's my sort of general thing, is I think if he's healthy, he should be an all-star last year. I think I would have really liked to have seen last season, see the version of that on in whatever timeline that is where we see Kevin play last year. I think that would have been a really, really interesting thing. I think once he went down, I think this season in itself kind of took a dive and it was all weird with the tie stuff and whatever. We'll hear more from Kevin, I think, as we kind of go on this season. He's going to be someone I think we hear setting the tone quite a bit. I think him and Tristan are kind of those guys for this group right now. But just Spencer, what I have here to talk about today mostly is the guard situation. So there are a lot of guards on this team. You have Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Delly, Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Knight. Knight and Sexton start the other night. You also could, KPJ is kind of a two, I think, right now, based on his defensive and just his very thin frame. Jetty arguably is kind of best projected as a big two, although he plays a lot of three, some four. You have guys like Sendarius Thornwell, you have guys like Dylan Windler that are going to factor in and kind of impact how much of these guard units we see. We saw Sexton and Knight as the starters of the night. I don't know what we're going to see Friday. I think Beilein might just, he seems like he's going to tinker, and he basically said, don't read too much into this. What do you just make of the fact that the Cavs have so many guys that are kind of ones and twos? all sort of have similar skill sets, Dele kind of being the one who's the least like all the others, but all seem like they're going to get a chance to play based on what we saw the other night. Obviously, the two young guys are going to get a chance to play and whatever, but what do you just make of this being such an overloaded position for the team?
Well, you know, that's how he came into the roster construction. You can't really do much about that. John Beilein enters a situation where he's got so many of these, I want to say combo guards, because there's a lot of combo guards in there that can play the one or the two, even though some are better at playmaking than others. I think that he's trying to utilize who has the most talent on the team, who's going to get after it the most. He's very old school as a coach as far as getting guys in there that want it, pretty much. That's why you see Jordan Clarkson slotted at the three spot, even though Jordan doesn't like to even say that it's the three spot, but in Beilein's system, he's playing three guard sets, which isn't like that out of whack for the NBA. We've seen plenty of three guard lineups before. It's when you play those four guard lineups potentially, or those at the four slot, maybe there's a guard forward type of player that plays there, and then you have one big. That's when it can get kind of problematic defensively. But I think that he's trying to utilize the best scoring talent that he has. You know, if you have a three-guard set with Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, and Jordan Clarkson in the lineup, or Colin Sexton, Brandon Knight, and Jordan Clarkson in the lineup, there's just different looks that you can bring. It's a very fast type of lineup where you can get up and down and transition. It's four out, one in. So offensively, it really doesn't matter as much as it does on the defensive end. And on the defensive end, that's where he's going to have the most problems, because the bigs are going to have to come over, shift, and help. But that's why they have guys like Larry Nance Jr. and, you know, John Henson and Tristan Thompson. I say Larry Nance Jr. Is a big, but he even said that he's even trying to play more of the four position instead of bang with bodies down low. So he might be an exception to the rule, but he gets a lot of steals more than blocks. But Henson and Thompson are those guys that really alter the shot. So they're going to have to provide a lot of help when the more small guards either get driven past or are just outpowered.
Yeah, I think the thing I want to see too is just what are the best duos that we see from this? Like, you and I, you know, covering games last year and thinking about this team a lot, like, we saw a lot of Sexton and Clarkson. That was, if I top my head, I think the most common Jordan Clarkson two-man lineup combo was Sexton and him. It wasn't very good. I think got better as the season went on to some degree in terms of just it looking a little bit better on film. That's just not a good defensive duo. I don't know how defensively, even if, like, you put John Henson out there, who I like, and I think I have an easier time envisioning a role for him now once they've kind of, based on what we've seen from Larry and who's going to start and whatever. I don't, like, know how you survive defensively if you do anything where you have three guards and Clarkson's the quote-unquote wolf. Like, I don't know what that looks like, because I think whoever, if he's playing the three, and let's just, I think that means that Jetty's probably not on the floor in that case, or is playing up at the four, which is its own set of defensive issues. I don't, like, if it's KPJ, Knight, Dele, whomever, Garland, Sexton, whomever at the two, and then someone else at the one, there's just no way they're going to defend. And even if it makes sense offensively, I just, like, unless there's certain teams you could try and sneak it against in terms of size, like Portland's going to play a little smaller in that regard. You know, Houston could have some smaller lineups like that, but those are better teams with pretty good players. And I don't know otherwise, like, how that works defensively unless you play a bunch of zone. It's too early to know, but it doesn't seem like that's, like, in the JB Bickerstaff repertoire. It seems like it's going to be a lot of switching based on what Larry and JC have said recently. So I don't know. I think I worry about defense a lot because it was so bad. And one of the key talking points that we've seen is, like, they don't, like, Tristan especially has been like, hey, like, we don't want to be the worst defensive team in the league, the worst defensive team in history again. Like, that's not going to happen. With this current roster construction, unless you adjust it so, like, someone doesn't play or you stick to very rigid lineup stuff, which maybe doesn't make sense because you want to experiment and tinker with the team that doesn't have super high expectations, I wonder if... Yeah. I just wonder if, like, they're just going to be so bad defensively just by virtue of, like, the personnel and sort of what that means for everything else that's going to go on.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have that many big guys. They have literally almost, I'd say, probably about three-fourths of their team or three-fifths of their team is under 6'10", I mean, you can't really do much about it. If that's what you have, that's what you have, unless you go out and get somebody, which I don't think that they're going to do. They don't even have a single seven-footer on the team, man.
Yeah, they don't really have wings either. Like, they have Jetty's a wing, Windler's a wing, KPJ is a wing, but him and Windler are both going to, obviously, rookies be bad defensively. Jetty's a little skinny, too. And then we don't even though I think he's the favorite to be on the end of the roster, I don't think Sendarius Thornwell isn't, like, a lock, and he'd be the best defensive wing that they'd have if he is on the roster. But, like, that's all they really have.
And I think that's a good reason why TLC could make the team, because he is the closest thing to a wing, I think. And that's, again, a different discussion. I think that this is what they have, and this is what they have to go forward with. I mean, if you don't have the personnel, then you have to adjust to it. You brought up J.B. Bickerstaff being in charge of the defensive schematics now. Mike Longobardi's been with the team for the last, what, 3-4 years?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to change dramatically. They're going to have to communicate. They're going to have to be able to fight through screens and be able to call out whatever, you know, defensive set they have. That's going to be a big adjustment. And maybe they aren't the worst defensive team, but I don't see them climbing past anything like 5 spots up. It's kind of like what Beilein said after the Wild Gold scrimmage yesterday is, you know, you don't have to make wholesale changes, but if you can move up percentage points, like, little by little, and that applies to both, you know, individual statistics and even the team, then if you're making progress, that's what means the most. So if they go from 30th to 26th this year, is that an improvement? I mean, it depends on how you look at it, especially with the less personnel than they had last year. I mean, David Nwaba was one of their best defenders last year, and he's gone off to Brooklyn. That's a tough, you know, person to replace in that sense. They've obviously shuffled a lot of the roster, and most of it is young now. I don't think there's anyone. I think only 3 players have over 6 years of experience.
Yeah.
So that's tough. That's tough to navigate, but they're going to have to learn. And I think in a situation where they don't have pressure and there's not much expectation on the outside, that they can just kind of roll the ball out and see where the pieces fall. And to that point, too, when it comes to wings, I think that Kevin Porter Jr. can develop into a wing. He's still going to be growing into his body. He's only 19 years old, and he's 6'6 already, at least listed as what his height is right now before the shoe thing. but he'll have to bulk up a little bit. But I think that he's got the length to be a good defender. Obviously, Dillian Windler, a little interchangeable between that 3 and 4. Even though they've got him listed as kind of a guard forward, he's still, you know, growing into his body. He's older, but they've got to find a way to kind of, you know, super glue situation here. It's not a long-term situation, but, you know, got to do what you got to do with what you have right now.
Do you feel like you learned anything? We'll get back to the guards in a second, but do you feel like you learned anything from the scrimmage and me being there? Or, like, just from what anyone said or how people, like, what happened? Like, do you feel like you got anything out of it in terms of aside from, like, they took it kind of easy?
It reminded me of, like, an All-Star game setting. It was very loose. They had practiced 6-7 days in a row before that. Beilein said he wasn't thrilled with, like, the level of competition, but he also understands that the guys were gassed. The guys are gassed because they practiced a week straight. So basically what they did was go out there, put on a little bit of the show. You know, Kevin Porter Jr. and Larry Nance were throwing down dunks left and right. He had a nice couple flashy passes from Darius Garland. You know, it was essentially just go out there and have fun. It was for the community of Cleveland. They came out. It was a free event. You don't learn much from inter-squad scrimmage because no one's going hard. And that's understandable. No one should go hard because you don't want to risk anything like injury or something like that. They did just have a preseason game the night before then. So there's not really much you could learn from it. It was basically like an open gym.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel like it's that. I think the preseason stuff is more interesting. And even that, I'm like, I think we take all of it with a pretty decent-sized grain, you know, tablespoon of salt or grain of salt or whatever. Okay, so when you look at the guards, I think all of them are going to at least get a chance to play. Who would you start?
Do I start?
Yeah, if you're guessing and also saying, like, this is what I think I would want to see, what would you say?
Just with the backcourt right away.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I think that I would just roll it out right away. I would go with Colin Sexton, Darius Garland. You know, Brandon Knight is set to probably have one of his best years in his career since going down with those injuries. But the thing is, if you're out here to develop and gain instant chemistry right away, you want to see how it goes through the ups and the downs. So throw him out there. You know, your fifth overall pick and your seventh overall pick, eighth overall pick, whatever it was, and see how they mesh. You know, they've been growing their relationships in summer league. They've been, you know, at the hip, texting, all that stuff, going out to eat, families, all that stuff. They've been developing the relationship off the court. I want to see what it's like on the court. And we got a little glimpse of that in the preseason game against San Lorenzo. Darius Garland was doing more of the knifing and playmaking while Colin was doing his scoring thing. So if you want to look at the proverbial mile they're looking after with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, Garland would be the Lillard to Sexton McCollum, the way it looks at the moment. But I throw him out to the Wolves right away. I know that there's this gradual process that people want to see, and we know how well that Knight helped Sexton, especially for Sexton playing off the ball. But I feel like Sexton's going to play more off the ball than Garland will, even though both of them are talking about being the playmakers and, you know, being able to alternate and handling the ball and running the offense. I think Garland's just a little bit more patient. I think he's more, you know, apt to getting what he wants without forcing it. And we see that with Colin right now. Is his issue is taking one too many dribbles, getting into trouble when he's trying to get into the lane, and that, you know, results in turnovers and stuff right now. But his shot, he's been putting up shots after practice. He's been staying after practice, working on that jumper. He's tweaked his form a little bit. I know that's gotten a lot of flack from people seeing what it looks like, but when you see what it looks like to start last year, there's certain improvement there. And he's confident in that shot. So I think that rolling those two out to start, putting them into the fire right away would be the best. I wouldn't be surprised if he went Sexton and Knight to just begin and let the rookie learn a little bit from the bench, but my preference would be to roll them both out there.
I agree. I don't see, unless they want to bring Darius along a little bit slowly. I think last year, like, they had the cover with Colin of, like, we're going to try and make the playoffs. We have George Hill. Like, we're going to start George Hill, whatever. I don't think, even if they've talked so much about process and avoided specific expectations, everyone has done this. Even if there's certain things they've said, we want to be better at X, Y, or Z, defense being kind of the big thing. I don't see a reason, unless you just want to give Darius a little more time to acclimate, as any reason not to start them right away.
Yeah, and you know what? I think a certain point that Beilein brought up throughout training camp is a very good one. I mean, learning curves are different for young players, right? It took Sexton a minute to really get acclimated to this level. There was a lot of tough times. There were times where he was questioned by the veterans and all that jazz. Garland just looks like he has a natural feel for the game.
Yes, my big takeaway from Monday. That was the only thing that I was like, okay, he's got the feel, he's got the little better kind of natural court vision than Colin does, plays with a little more of like a shiftiness. Colin's like a freight train where he's just going full speed all the time. Darius is like breaking and shifting and kind of driving with a little more control when he plays.
Yeah, and I don't want to make that inference based off of one preseason game, but we have to remember this dude was probably a consensus top three, top five pick anyways before the injury at Vanderbilt. There were scouts that, I mean, he wouldn't be a clutch client if he was not. Let's just be real with that.
Yeah.
So I think that that'd be the best course of action. Just roll him out there, see what it looks like. He has a very, very quiet confidence about him. He's not the most talkative guy. He's a very nice kid. And I think that him and Colin's relationship can just only strengthen over time through the goods and the bads.
Yeah, I would just roll it out and let's see. I think the starting five otherwise, like from Monday, is what I would do. And I look at the backcourt. Like, I think the guy that I think defensively I think makes the most sense is just Dele, because I do think he's just going to at least going to try a little harder on that end. You can kind of bank on that. But it'll be interesting to see how this all works out, because Brandon Knight comes in. He's looked good. He's been one of the guys that they've really talked up in camp. He's been someone that I think has come across pretty well. He played decently the other night. He's going to do floor spacing and dribbling and all that stuff. And he's also a guy that's trying to get a contract next year. Delly's trying to get another contract. Clarkson's trying to get another contract. That will be, I think, one of the tests for Beilein, is like, he has all these guys that are trying, that want playing time, that want to that have been in the league, that have accomplished things, you know, at different levels, but want to play. And it's all like centered in these kind of two position groups, but more so in the backcourt. You have three guys that are playing for their next contract there, alongside a guy that's in his second year and a guy that's in his first year. It's all very good now, and it's unfair to like speculate that it's going to go badly, but how that all navigates will be really, really interesting to me, because I'm just sure there's going to be at some point, it just seems like kind of unavoidable to me, that there's going to be like some kind of conversation about that group where like someone has to not play, especially if like things get off the rails. Windler, and you want to play Windler and Porter, maybe you want to play Thornwell or something, or Timothy Walkabaro if he makes the team or whatever. One of those guys probably has to go to the bench to make that work.
Yeah, yeah. And if you want to really think about what the bench rotation is going to be, so it, the way it was on Monday is it was Delly, Clarkson, KPJ, Larry Nance, and it was Bolden, but I'm imagining that would be Henson if yeah. you're looking at who came off first there. It's hard to imagine Matthew Dellavedova not being the odd man out here, even though I will say John Beilein loves his defense and he loves his leadership, and who wouldn't? I mean, that guy just brings his lunch pail to work and just goes, just goes, and that's what he does. It's going to be very difficult to figure out and differentiate minutes. I think that Delly would have the least amount of out of those guards, because he doesn't really. There's a lot more of a hunter mentality, and I hate using Beilein's own words, but there's a lot more of a hunter mentality with Jordan Clarkson. Brandon Knight, obviously, we know talent-wise is just far superior. Kevin Porter Jr., I don't really know how much time he's going to get. His might fluctuate, man. We don't, because the organization wants to be patient with him, provide structure, something that he didn't really have at USC and growing up around him. And at the pro level, it's going to be very paramount to his success. They want to roll him out there, but at the same time, they want to develop him the right way, because they know exactly what kind of talent he is. And we've seen glimpses of that. But I don't know how much time he's going to get out of the gate. And, maybe he does get, 20 minutes right away, but I don't know how long that's going to last. Differentiating the rotations and the minutes is going to be a challenge. And Beilein's got that issue on his hand right away. But I think that he's going to see it as a positive and give it as a chance and opportunities for everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Kind of Spencer, wrap it up on this. When you look at kind of the rest of the preseason, and as we get into the start of the season, they have a game against Detroit, and then they play the Celtics in a home and home series. Anything you're looking for as we get towards the end of the preseason here?
Just continued defensive growth. I think that's going to be their main focus throughout the season here. Even just the beginning of the preseason, they're really trying to get those principles right. I will say that if they can't really defend because of size, the way that they could best kind of counteract that is by getting steals. I mean, Jetty Osman had five of them on Monday and got out into the transition and easy points. That's the best way that they can kind of counteract the diminutiveness. I don't want to say that, but, being outsized by other teams is by getting steals and just kind of playing fast. I think that'd be their biggest strength in, less half court.
Yeah, I want to see the offense take a little bit more shape. I want to just kind of get a better read on some of the sets. I don't feel like Monday was – I feel like Monday you could just still see that this was a group that's still learning how to do that stuff and learning kind of the intricacies of the system and everything. I think you just saw that. I'd like to see if Kevin just kind of looks a little more like himself. I don't think he played – You know, I just think you look like a guy that hasn't played like a ton of live basketball in the last year plus.
His shots were so flat. It was so apparent. He was probably winded, and there was no jump on those shots.
Yeah, it just didn't feel like the Kevin I think we're going to see this season. And then I think you're right. I think the defense and, you know, let's see if John Henson gets some run. Let's see, you know, just kind of the little end of the roster stuff. Like, does Ante Zizic get any chance at minutes? Like, what kind of happens there? Does someone like Thornwell or Cabarro get a chance to play earlier in the game? Are they not really going to invest a lot of time, you know, in the back of that roster? I think that's just all the little stuff. I'm not expecting to learn, like, much about the team in terms of how good they're going to be. I don't think my expectations are going to really change. It's just the little kind of minutia that we're going to get. I think just we're learning about Beilein on the fly here, and I think he's going to tip his hand a little bit, if not too much, but we're going to learn some stuff as we have these like three games kind of spaced out properly.
Yeah, especially, I mean, the first preseason game started with Chetty, you know, faking a cut up top and then going back door, and Love found him on a nice little bounce pass, you know, something like that, and just seeing the sets and the different types of language and communication that they're still learning on the fly here. Because we got to remember, too, Beilein's a rookie.
Yeah, Beilein's a rookie. And these guys, I mean, guys like Jetty came into camp kind of late after a long summer, and it's still very early. Like, it's like he said this on media day and has said it in practice. Like, he's used to these long preseasons to get guys ready. He had a week. And I think that's part of the trade-off. You get guys more rest and they get a longer offseason and whatever. But, you know, after playing more many more games than the college season does, but you see a little bit of kind of sloppiness, you know, when you only get a week to kind of cram stuff in.
No doubt. Yep. It's definitely a very delicate process, especially for guys that are coming off of injuries or a long summer, like someone like Jetty Osmond or Matthew Dellavedova playing in FIBA World Cup. You know, those are things that you have to take into consideration when you decide how hard to go, and Beilein likes to go hard. He's a fundamental guy, and he doesn't take things easy on guys.
No, that was, by the way, was the most interesting thing I saw in that feed article was probably just that Kevin said, like, there is like a dialogue kind of about the fundamental stuff they've done. I think that's kind of was one of the more interesting little tidbits in that piece, just because like it probably is very different for these guys to come in and have to do that. But that's going to be it for today's show. Spencer, find him on Twitter at SpinDavies. Read his work at places like the Basketball Insider. Spencer, as always, thanks so much. Looking forward to having you on a bunch more this year.
For sure, Chris. Thanks.